Hey, happy Monday. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ailish and Haley Selvian this morning covering for Justin Cuthbert, who's away on vacay all week long. He's in Costa Rica, probably just sleeping on a hammock out overlooking the waves crashing in the ocean. Just like us here in the studio.
That's right.
The darkness. Yeah. Haley covered Friday and today, and then we're going to have Brent Gunning over the next 4 days. Blue Jays opening week is around the corner, just a couple days here until the season begins. We had doubleheader of Leafs and Raptors this past weekend, lots of NCAA, Sweet 16. Now we have the Final Four set. Lots going on. How's it going this morning, Haley?
Good, good. I feel like last night was a tough day. I mean, it wasn't tough in the sense that I put in a couch shift and just watched sports all day. But it was a tough day of like prioritizing.
Sometimes difficult.
What was going to get my
multiple
focus.
Screens, right?
There was a lot going on, but those are, you know, there's no Sunday football. Like those are my Sundays during football season are my favorite days of the week. But last night was a little Sunday football-esque, because there was just so much.
There was. Leafs and Raptors at the same time, so you got to experience the joys of trying to do a split screen, and you hosted Leafs Talk afterwards with J.D. Bunkus, so you can go check out.
There was no split screen.
Yeah, that's true. You can go check out that podcast as well. You guys are breaking it down. I had it on my YouTube stream as well, so lots going on. Won't have that again, though, because both teams not in action today, Monday, no Toronto sports. You got Tuesday. The Raptors play a really big game against Miami Heat, and the Leafs are back in action Wednesday. So you can just go about your regular viewing schedule, which would be great. But last week on a Monday, we started talking about what was the best thing you watched all weekend. I feel like it's a good way to start wrapping up a weekend with a lot of sports. As we mentioned, sometimes it's like overwhelming how much time you do spend on the couch. But if you had to pick the best thing that you got to watch all weekend, where do you start with that?
I would say Caitlin Clark, and maybe it's recency bias because it was kind of a later game late last night. I didn't catch the very end of it because it was like midnight. I need to go to bed. I'll be awake in 4.5 hours here. But she just put on a show. She's the star point guard for Iowa in the women's NCAA March Madness tournament. Iowa beat Louisville last night. So they're going to the first women's Final Four in like over 30 years for Iowa. So she's led them to the promised land. I mean, they're almost there. They're not at the championship game yet, but she had a 40-point triple-double.
That's insane.
Last night. And she, like, this, like, she's a baller. She pulls up from, like, 5 feet beyond three. Such a smooth shooter. I mean, she's unstoppable. And she became the only women's or men's player in tournament history to have a 40-point triple-double. So she did that last night in the Elite Eight. Iowa headed to the Final Four for the first time in 3 decades. I mean, she's just a walking highlight reel. She's incredible. And you take a scroll through Twitter, and there's like so many like NBA players, football players, everyone just like talking about Caitlin Clark and what she's doing at this tournament right now. It's like, it's a shame. I mean, I'm sure she's going to get National Player of the Year. That hasn't come out yet. It's such a shame. I was thinking of this yesterday that we don't get to watch Paige Bueckers and Caitlin Clark go at it this year. Obviously, Paige is out after tearing her ACL again, but there's just like so many powerhouses in the women's college bracket right now, and Caitlin Clark was just unbelievable last night.
Yeah, the I think it's the second time she's had or a multiple career 35-point plus triple doubles. Which is pretty incredible in NCAA basketball.
This is, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but this one was wild. The Iowa football team's not very good. I mean, it's fine, but last night she had more points than the Iowa football team had in a single game all season.
Oh my God.
So they never hit like 40 this year, but she did that herself versus the entire football team. So
and
she's unreal.
An additional reason why that game, and that's one of my best viewing experiences as well this weekend, but Iowa's assistant head coach, Jensen's father passed away yesterday morning. And so Caitlin Clark post game, said they dedicated, and she dedicated that performance to
that's amazing.
Her coach's dad. So a little bit of extra special there. And then afterwards, I don't know if you've seen the clip where she looks up at the crowd or at the opposing team and does the hand in front of the face. Well,
she's doing that at like Haley Van Lith, who is kind of like, she's super fun. She's really good. She's a stud.
But there's some little feistiness
She's had some, you know, moments with her opponents over this tournament already. Yeah. I think there was a viral clip going around after the game against Texas. Her and one of the Texas forwards were, you know, sharing some words in the handshake line. So Caitlin Clark added a little bit of spice after, you know, just dropping a dagger of a three late in the game.
So for me, the NCAA Final Four being set, the journey to this, which is the second highest Final Four ever in event history. So you've got UConn number four, Miami number five, San Diego State number five, and Florida Atlantic number nine. Only time that there was a higher combination was 2011 Final Four that saw UConn three, Kentucky four, and then Butler eight and VCU 11. So that was a crazy year. But that game yesterday afternoon, unfortunately, with one of our Canadians' very own, this was five versus six. So Creighton, our Blue Jays, I really wanted them to at least make a little bit of headway down the stretch here, make it to the Final Four, because we were excited about them. We talked to Andrew Nemhard's father on, I think it was Thursday's show last week, and that game was Ryan Nemhard's father as well. That game was really exciting down the stretch. So there's a tie at the 31 seconds left. There's this like layup thrown into the court, and then Creighton steals it. They do a quick layup, and the ball goes on the other side. Then there's the foul by Ryan Nemhard on that shot to tie it, and then the free throw attempt, which is missed first one, second one's hit. Then there's the full court ball toss down the end, and then there's a tip. Anyway, the final two minutes.
It's like a wild game.
Yeah, the final 2 minutes took way too long because there's so many reviews. But
that's
just the
basketball, baby.
That's it. You're just like, are they celebrating? Are they not celebrating? Yeah. Nonetheless, that final, that game, like that's what March Madness is all about. That's the badness. It's too bad that we didn't see Ryan Nemhard and Creighton Blue Jays go further than that. But it just sets up a crazy Final Four, and I think we'll talk about that later in the show. About you know, no number one seeds, no number two seeds. Like, this is a real unpredictable championship that we're going to see.
Yeah,
and I feel like fans are maybe divided in a sense of, oh, I don't want to see that. I want to see the best teams in the final. And then there's the other side that are like, this is what college basketball and college sports are about. Like, maybe the best teams don't get there in the end. So we'll touch on that later in the show. But that for me was a really great viewing experience. You know, I love the unpredictable, and that was certainly it. The back and forth, that final minute was full of suspense and drama. So those are NCAA basketball once again winning our viewing experience this weekend. We'll have Frank Cervelli on at 7, as always. Blake Murphy's going to join us at 8 o'clock, and the Tiba Hutchinson, captain Canadian men's soccer team, is going to join us at 8:30. We're going to touch on all their return to Toronto, return to action here, and then we'll do winners and losers at 7:30. So lots lined up for your Monday. But let's start with Leafs, because Leafs had two busy games, Preds and Canes this weekend, starting with the Hurricanes, which they were not successful in terms of score sheet, but I thought there was a lot of positives to take from that game. Mm-hmm. Starting with Austin Matthews, once again, he's the story of the weekend. Again, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think that's how we left Friday. Austin Matthews looks like he's back, and he was never really gone, but to a level of performance. It's funny because we're like, he's gone, and then he's still performing at a pretty good pace if you're a fan of any sport and any superstar on your team. But compared to last year where he was Hart Trophy candidate, 60 goals.
Yes.
Matthews on Friday night, 15 shots on goal. 15 shots. The franchise record he ties. He has another two-goal performance. He just looks like he's elevated to this level that if he can sustain this in round one of the playoffs, then that is I don't know how you don't feel confident when you look at what the Lightning have done as of late, the way that this Maple Leafs team is rolling, the way the core four has started to really pull together some string of performances. But there was a stretch there where we were, you know, unsure about how Auston Matthews was playing. Was he playing through injury? Whatever. We find out that he had dealt with some injury. And then in the back of your mind, like, can he just turn it on? Well, he has certainly turned it on in the last three or four games to a point where if this is the level that he has reserved for when it matters, I can't feel more confident right now in just how Auston Matthews has looked over the last three or four games. So another great performance Friday and, of course, yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. There's a sense for most of this season that something wasn't quite right with Auston Matthews, and he just didn't look like the same guy as last year. And I'm joking when I do the like, eh. He just wasn't the Auston Matthews that we saw last year. Like, his shot didn't look as strong. He wasn't, you know, getting his release off as fast. Mm-hmm. He wasn't, like, he just looked off. We now know that he was playing through the hand injury and some other bumps and bruises. Obviously, he missed some time with a knee injury as well. But he has just looked so much better over the last couple games. And it's not just like a one-off where you say, okay, maybe this is it. Is this the game where he starts to kind of string some games along? Like, he's in it. Like, he's kind of going back to back in these last two games, looking like himself. The game before that we talked about on Friday, he looked like himself again. He's playing more physical. He's getting his shots off quicker. We're seeing that, like, versatility in his shot again, you know, like the wrister, he's getting shots off quick. He had one shot that he was trying to get off, like, through traffic, like, fighting between two guys in the Preds last night. It wasn't, you know, a super strong shot because he was falling down after, you know, getting hit between the two guys. But he's got his big frame. He's using it. He does so many things in all three zones as well just to get his team, you know, up and out, back into the offensive zone. So I think if there's reason for fans to be worried about the way that the Leafs have looked post deadline, like, Auston Matthews looking like this is almost the trump card, right? Like, because you can say, like, you know, their underlying numbers don't look great, or like their record's just fine, and I they still haven't figured out the D pairs yet. But you've got Auston Matthews looking like Auston Matthews again. And, you know, he's having this down year and he's still on pace for 40 goals. So all of this talk of him not looking like himself, it's just relative to what we have seen from him. Like, we are not saying Auston Matthews has had a terrible year by any means, because he's, again, on pace for 40 goals. But he looks like he's starting to, you know, there's that fluidity in his shot. He's got the quick release. Obviously, he's getting his shot off more frequently, as we saw against the Canes with 15 shots on goal. So lots of things to like about Auston Matthews in his game lately.
So Leafs lose 5-3 to the Canes. Obviously, a really tough battle between those two teams, two teams with high expectations this postseason as well. The Canes are a really tough team defensively. Like, they're very stingy. The Maple Leafs did get 44 shots on them. So they were able to, you know, penetrate and get those shots. Obviously, Auston Matthews with 15 really helps. But Cale Yarncroak, another opportunity to continue the conversation around him and the chemistry that he's had up there. He's got 6 goals this month. He's really turned it on. That pairing, the way that they're matching up together, I'm really liking that duo. And of all things being Blender Central, that's the one thing that has stuck. And maybe there's the tiny little bit of, okay, Sheldon Keefe found that. That was something he created as well. And Auston Matthews has now said publicly, like, I'd like to keep playing with this match.
I'd like
to keep playing with this guy. And it's working. Yeah. So, you know, maybe we see some more line changes throughout the next little while, and that's fine. But I think that Cale Yarncroak's earned himself that opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Especially just like this month alone, 6 goals in 1 month.
Yep. You know,
the chemistry has been there, so good to see it. But then last night, Maple Leafs with a win against the Predators. Now they're 21-5-3 following a loss this season. And this is a long season to try to find tangible things about a team. But being able to rebound 21-5-3 following a loss, that to me is a real contributor or a real factor of a team having some, like, mental fortitude, having a bounce back opportunity and capturing that.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good record, 21-5-3 after a loss. So, you know, in the playoffs, you get down 1-0 in a series, knowing that you have proven to find a way in the regular season. We talk about this all the time, Justin and I, like, right now, what are we taking away from these games? Like, they're just battling for a home ice. Seems like they've captured it now. But to me, that's certainly something to circle. This game, I think, comes down to also the way that Joseph Woll looked. I was really impressed with him. he's obviously had an incredible AHL career this year. That alone, all-star. He's really been propelling the Marlies to some success, at least this season, regular season-wise. But he looked really, really strong last night. It's his third win in four starts in the NHL this year, and they weren't all against, you know, the Bruins. But nonetheless, you're a guy coming into a big spot with a team that has always had goaltending questions all season long, don't get me wrong. And he looked really, really good. So I just felt like that game could have went really down the drain. He made some big, big saves. I don't know what else you can ask for from a guy that comes up AHL, gets a big spot with the Maple Leafs on the road. And I was really impressed.
It was looking like one of those games in the first period, especially, you know, the Leafs didn't get a shot on goal until Mark Giordano's shot at the 14:30 in the first period. And it was looking like one of those shot attempts at that point were 12-1 in favor of the Preds. Shots on goal were 9-0 in favor of the Preds.
Sleepy start.
And it was looking like one of those games where you're like, ah, it's a back-to-back. Like, you know, it's a 2-0 loss is a 2-0 loss. It's fine, whatever. Pack it in. They should have played better in front of their young rookie goalie and Joseph Woll. And he was the reason. Like, he looked calm, cool, collected through that stretch. They, you know, they didn't play great in front of him. The Preds, you know, had all the pressure. They had all the momentum. The Leafs really struggled in transition in the beginning of that period. They couldn't get into the offensive zone. They weren't making tape-to-tape passes. It was like looking like one of those games last night. And it was Woll who kind of kept them in it. He had a really great start. He was really active in his crease. He's very athletic. You know, I think at first glance, you could think, ooh, his rebound control is not very good because there's a lot of pucks that he doesn't freeze. But I think he does a really good job when he's not freezing the puck of, like, kicking it away from where the action is. There was one really good kick save that he made in the first period where all the pressure was coming from, like, the left circle. And he did well to, like, just kick it to the right. He's like, you know what? I can't freeze this puck, but I'm also not going to just let it hang out right in front of me. You know, shoved over there. So I think really good, you know, awareness. He made a couple really good passes in this game, actually, specifically when the team was on the power play, like really good heads up plays, seeing guys like Morgan Riley, like up, you know, sorry, Morgan Riley, but like up into the play, finding guys in those spaces. So I think you like what you see in Joseph Woll last night. I think, you know, there's going to be lots of people saying, like, just start him in game one, baby.
Who is
Joe
saying that,
Woll
Haley?
In the playoffs. Have you not seen that?
No way.
Oh,
that's got to be joking. You're not starting Joseph Woll in the playoffs.
I think there's people being like, what's his impact going to be in the postseason? Because he just comes in and he has a great game. Look, the Nashville Predators, they are such a diminished team that I'm actually very impressed with the way that they played last night based on how many players have been traded at the deadline and how many guys are hurt. And Matt Duchene goes down last night as well. So they were kind of scrapping together a roster, and they've had, you know, a pretty good run here. They're kind of still in the playoff picture. Last night might have been the dagger for them. But, like, this is the Nashville Predators we're talking about. So we've got it's a small sample size, and we're not... This isn't the Tampa Bay Lightning in first round of the playoffs here. But I do think you can take away the fact that the Leafs have a solid number three in their goalie depth chart that they can dip into if they need to in the postseason. Like, I'm not trying to bring the bad vibes here. I'm not trying to bring a bad omen. But, like, Ilya Samsonov's not back yet. And there's no guarantee that he's going to be sharp and ready for the postseason. We don't know when he's going to be back. And we don't know if Matt Murray's going to stay healthy.
No, there's always,
like, the
been question
marks with
for
Samsonov
sure.
and Murray has not been, can they play when they're healthy? Because we have seen that they can. It's just, are they available to Sheldon Keefe to start in this game? So I think what you take away from this performance from Woll is that he can step into the NHL and he can be a factor. He can make the saves you need to make. He looks comfortable. Sure, it's with Nashville. Yes, it's a small sample size. But I think with Samsonov still not with the team, I think over these next, what, 9 games, 10 games left before Samsonov gets back, you give Woll a couple more shots, get him feel even more comfortable, get his confidence up, get the confidence from Sheldon Keefe and from the front office. Obviously, when Samsonov comes back, you send the kid down, get Samsonov comfortable. But for the time being, like, get the confidence. I think the Leafs have a pretty decent number three option right now.
That's how I see it, though, is a number three option. I think that Joseph Woll's done enough to play himself into the conversation of a backup role next season. I think if we're going into the postseason relying on Joseph Woll and his third or fourth start in the NHL this season, I feel a little bit less positive about it. I mean, this is his, he played the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Montreal Canadiens, the Calgary Flames, and the Nashville Predators this season. Remember that Columbus Blue Jackets game where he left and led in four goals. That was his first start, February 11th. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going to look back at those and break it down and say that
you can only win the games that you're in, though, right?
And I agree. Like, I think there's no negative in giving Joseph Woll an opportunity while Samsonov and Murray are not both available. But the second Samsonov comes back, I don't see this being now like a three-way goalie debate or a three-way goalie battle. But, like, Joseph Woll has done enough this season to at least this postseason have the conversation of, hey, if you don't find a way to keep both these goaltenders, if there isn't a future with Samsonov and Murray as your tandem, Joseph Woll has been a homegrown, developed talent here, and you should be really proud of the progress he's made this season. And you know, having him come in down the stretch here, if that happens, if Samsonov isn't back or Murray needs a day off, or you're looking at, we've already... you know, we've already lined up exactly what it's going to look like in the playoffs, give him an opportunity. I don't see anything wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I do think that this is a next year conversation, but I can't feel more positive right now about where just having him come in and look strong. Like, that's it. He made some big saves, big saves. I still need to see Murray and Samsonov battle it out down here. The fact that Samsonov's been away from the team for a little while, I know he's had some family issues, and he said it's wife had a baby and he wasn't feeling up to 100%. So not like a personal knock on him whatsoever, but you know, the Maple Leafs are back Wednesday. They've got Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday. And so, you know, I'm hoping he gets back in the mix very soon here, because these games might not mean anything really standings wise, because it looks like they've locked up home ice advantage. You know, obviously they've known to play the Tampa Bay Lightning for a while, but it does mean a lot for who's going to get the opening start on night one. And of course, what the lines are going to look like. And we saw, 12-6 again. I think that McCabe and Brody, that shutdown pair, is really, really, really good.
Morgan Rielly played really well with Luke Schenn last night too.
So maybe we found something. The only thing that worries me is we have just been saying Brody has been that glue guy to help, you know, Morgan Rielly all season long, and him and McCabe is like an incredible defensive shutdown pair. Yeah. I just worry that Morgan Rielly, I know he looked decent with Schenn. I don't know if that's like the biggest point of comfortability for me right now, but last night was a good, like a really, really good example of a shutdown pair in the playoffs. You put down McCabe and Brody in the final minutes when you're up one goal. Like I felt really good about watching them. The Leafs only gave up four shots from the slot all game, not just because those guys were on, but they did a really good job at shutting out the key areas where goals are going to be scored. That's the lowest amount all season long. So they played really well defensively as well in front of Joseph Woll. Maybe that has to do with it too. You know, you have an AHL goalie and, you know, you want to keep his confidence high.
Yeah.
You're going to try to limit as many opportunities in front of the net. But I think McCabe and Brody is a win from the weekend. I think even Schenn and Rielly could be stepping towards a win. We'll see if they continue with those pairs. But a lot of line jumbling might start coming back too. We found some things that work. Kelly Yarncroak. We found that this defensive pairing works. Like, maybe we start toning it down and like giving a little bit of leeway and a runway to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to get fully invested in the forward lines without Ryan O'Rielly back. Yeah. Because he's going to be such an important piece of this
and
roster.
Matthew Nyes, baby.
Yeah. Well, I think I said this yesterday on Leafs Talk. Part of me feels like one of the keys to like unlocking the Leafs' ideal top nine is Michael Bunting playing his way back up into the top six. Because if you have Michael Bunting clicking in the way that you want him to, I mean, I really do like Kelly Yarncroak on the top line. He is a player who does everything right. So he's going to be someone who can help Matthews and Marner. And I mean, look, Matthews and Marner are very good on the defensive side of the puck in their own right. Like, they don't need a Kelly Yarncroak to make sure that if they're in the D zone, they don't get, you know, screwed over because they can't handle it. Those two are very good defensive players, but Kelly Yarncroak just adds another level there. He battles on the boards. He's always trying to get his stick on loose pucks. Like, having that guy who can just win puck battles and get Mitch Marner the puck, who can then get Austin Matthews the puck in the slot, I mean, it makes almost too much sense. You know, it's not a crazy leap to think like, ooh, Kelly Yarncroak would look really good there. He's fast. He battles. And he can finish when he gets his chances as well, whether that's on the doorstep, whether that's cleaning something up from Matthews and Marner on the rebound, you know, shooting from the slot in and of on his own. So I like the fit from Yarncroke. But if you have Bunting kind of in the mix in that top six, then that allows you to have the Ryan O'Reilly 3C option, mm-hmm. which gives you the Kerfoot O'Reilly Lafferty third line, which would be a really good kind of matchup line in the postseason. And then your fourth line is like a Nola Chari, David Kampf, Zach Aston Reese. And then I think the forward lines kind of work and they make a lot of sense. JD and I talked last night about the Bunting Lafferty Achari combo. Mm-hmm. We're like, I wanted to love that. That seemed like such a annoying trio of people, but it left me wanting a little more. Mm-hmm. They weren't annoying enough. And I think it's just, you want Michael Bunting to work his way back up into that top six. If that's with Austin Matthews again.
Well, that's where he's played the best, but like also,
sure, but
I would play the best too if I played with the best players in the NHL.
Like when Austin Matthews wasn't with the team, when he was out or when he wasn't playing well, like you saw that so much in the way that Bunting was playing. Mm-hmm. Like, in so he needs to find kind of his groove again, but he's going to be in a tough competition to bump Cali Yarncroke out of that top line spot as well. So.
And Alex Kerfoot as of late, like he's
on fire. I know he's unstoppable.
We joke about his goal scoring prowess, but that's his second goal in the last three games.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about a guy that breaks through, gets on the score sheet. You saw the relief in his face a couple nights ago when he got that goal. I'm not saying that this is going to be the playoff performer that we should all bank on, but you know what? A little bit of positivity and confidence in a guy who, you know, has kind of worked his way up again in the lineup, I think is important. And Keefe talked about Kerfoot having another good showing, another good night, and kind of his fit on that second line. We got that post-game clip. Josh, let's play it when he's got it.
All right, that's a good goal for him. First of all, an unbelievable play by Tavares in the neutral zone to put him in that spot, but good finish by him. You know, that's two on the trip for him. And, you know, he just continues to be a responsible guy defensively for him. I thought that line really needed a sort of a stabilizer defensively to play with them, and Kerf did a good job of that and so happened to score a goal. So like the way that he responded in that position tonight.
He's a guy that's got a lot to prove too this year because he is on a contract that I think he hasn't lived up to, an opportunity to try to live up to that this offseason as well. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that we basically shopped out of the team at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. He's still here. I think there's a little bit of fire under him just to prove that he has a fit on this team. And a little bit of friendly competition. Once again, Bunting, Kerfoot, then you're going to have Ryan O'Reilly back in the mix. You're going to have the future of the Maple Leafs joining from NCAA. You've got him coming in looking for a fit. So I think there's a lot of good things to look at down the stretch to keep these guys like motivated at least. But Kerfoot, baby steps forward. I was impressed. I think that's good in terms of just the Leafs finding a little bit of a groove here.
Yeah.
John Tavares, of course, one of the major storylines from last night. Two goals, both on the power play. He's now leading the Leafs with power play goals this season. That was goal 150 and 151 in his Maple Leafs career. Mm-hmm. So some milestones hit last night. But, you know, he's clearly found a niche in that power play that's working really well.
Clean it up on the doorstep.
That's it, baby. That was my role. Just put the puck in the net. You don't have to do much work. You just kind of exist.
Ailish, just go get park there.
Just park your butt in front of the net.
Get position. Your stick. Keep your stick on the ice.
No worries. Yeah. That's it. That's what I learned. But you know what? That's going to be very valuable come playoffs because what's the factor that can keep you from winning or losing games? Special teams. And we saw that in the playoffs before. And if you aren't performing at a high enough rate going into the playoffs, finding some confidence, finding a guy that's putting multiple pucks in the net with John Tavares, I don't know. That and goaltending could be the reasons why the Maple Leafs either make it through the first round or not. So good to see that that's happening right now.
I apologize if anyone listened to Leafs talk yesterday. So you're hearing me say the exact same thing over again this morning. I did warn people. I was like, you know, if you come and listen to me say the exact same thing tomorrow morning. Wake up at 4 a.m. with me.
People probably wanted to tune in.
Yeah, no. It's like, no, I'm not. Sorry, Ailish. There's, you know, great. A couple people being like, no, thank you. But there's this, you know, obviously 5-on-5 production is very important. We know that. I am not saying that it is not important. But there's this thing with John Tavares this season where people are consistently being like, we only has this many 5-on-5 points this season. It's like, sure, but like the power play is important too. And it's one of those things where I'm like, why did we all of a sudden trick ourselves into thinking that being reductive when you are on the power play is a bad thing? Yes, you want him to be better at 5-on-5. Because in the postseason, if your power play opportunities kind of dry up, sure, yeah, you want John Tavares, who is your second line center. He's your captain. You want him to be productive in those moments. But think of last night. I mean, those two goals in the power play, the first one is the goal that kind of opens the scoring when the Leafs were getting caved in the opening period. Huge goal for John Tavares. Yep. And then the other one is they, you know, it's in the end of the game. Nashville's making a game of it. You get a gift from Cal Foote, who high sticks William Nylander in the face. Not sure what he was complaining about either. He very clearly clipped him up high.
That always kills me. It's like the video evidence is that you put your stick in his face. I don't know what else to say.
Be quiet. It's very obvious you just hit him in the face. And they don't waste the gift. And that's John Tavares, you know. And it's not the prettiest goal, but they're important and they're valuable. And we have seen teams crumble in the postseason because their power play is awful. The Florida Panthers last season were terrible on the power play in the postseason, and they got kicked out in the second round. Crumbled. If they could have had a power play goal here and there, maybe they could have made it a little bit farther. Nope. So this idea that, you know, John Tavares not scoring at 5-on-5 is, you know, the end of the world, it's not great. You want him to be productive in all situations. But he's also one of the top 10 power play producers in the NHL this season.
Mm-hmm. And it could come down to that.
You know, people don't really complain that it's not the same. You know, I'm not even going to do it. I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
So Leafs split
I have to say it.
Okay, what are you going to say?
Because now people are like, what were you going to say? I was going to say people don't really complain when Leon Draisaitl has like, you know, 40 of his 60 goals.
They certainly don't complain about that, no.
But I'm not going to make the John Tavares, Leon Draisaitl leap. They're not the same player. I apologize.
Don't get radioed for
that one. Never mind. I'm muting my mic.
Okay. So Leafs split the weekend, but I think there's a lot of good positives from both games. They're moving forward against the, as we just mentioned, Florida Panthers on Wednesday night. They've got the Sens and the Wings on a back-to-back this weekend. So certainly some winnable games here, certainly some opportunities to get this goaltending conversation maybe a little bit further into what's solidified, get the D pairings and the forward lines.
Those teams are going to be hungry too, though. Sens and Red Wings,
These are not cakewalks. They are winnable games, but you know that the play is elevated at least from both of those weekend back-to-backs. And then the Florida Panthers, of course, they always got something to prove. So lots to look forward to this week. We'll keep breaking that down. We'll have Frank Saravelli at 7 a.m. as well. And good to see Matthews returning to form. That's kind of the main takeaway. Feeling good about that. Let's keep that going. The Raptors, however, do sweep their weekend set. Now, every game is a must win for the Raptors. After they dropped last week's home opener of their little stretch here, four games, they went back-to-back wins, starting with the league-worst Pistons. And you know what? I'm fine with it because they're league-worst, and I watched that game.
I picked the Pistons to win last week, so don't listen to my
traditionally
advice.
You would think that Dwayne Casey would roll into town and find a way to beat the Raptors, but it just certainly did not look like it was going to be that way. Early on, the Raptors took control of the game. They crushed the Pistons 118-97, who are the worst team in the NBA. So you know what? You can only win the games in front of you, and it was great to see the Raptors start their weekend that way. Pascal Siakam was absolutely dominant, 32 points. He played with such a level of confidence and an edge, propelling that Raptors team to start that game. They had with the Raptors, if they start strong and finish strong, I know that sounds crazy, that hasn't been part of their game plan.
If they
play well for four quarters, they should win the game. There's been so many stretches though this season where they start really strong and they fall off. They did that again, but Friday night made the difference, starting strong, holding on. And that's all about just like a level of consistency throughout a game. I mean, as I said, they were the league worst Pistons, but the Wizards last night was kind of maybe more of a tell. That's a team that...
That was like a Raptor. That was a Raptors win last night.
Scottie Barnes is back, so that's a huge piece of positivity from the weekend. With all this being said, all of this now is about where the Raptors are and how they're going to move forward. So they win both games, but the Hawks also lost last night, which is huge for the Raptors. So now they're both tied for 8th, 37-38 on the season. Bulls are a half a game back with a game in hand. Heat, who the Raptors play next. Now this is all teeing up to be an incredible night tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. Heat are three games up on the Raps and 7th seed. So they play each other. Raptors have another chance to get back to 500. They have not been at 500 this season since December 9th. They've been clawing their way to 500, and now they're right on the cusp of it again. Okay. In a must win game tomorrow night, Kyle Lowry and the Miami Heat are in town. But if they can't capture that win, it's going to be real tough down the stretch because 5 out of 7 of their next games are on the road, and the Raptors have been so good at home that this is why this four-game stretch really meant something to them. 5 out of 7 after this are on the road. 5 of them are playing against teams that are over 500. So, like, this is why Tuesday night, we'll tee this up tomorrow as well, is so imperative for the Raptors to find a way to win. And they've been putting together some good performances. Their stars are looking good. Pascal's looking great. OG is back on his two-way game. Fred's been looking good. Mm-hmm. They're even getting bench contributions from someone like a Chris Boucher, Jeff Down Jr.
Yeah, he's good against the Pistons.
So there's a lot of good things to look at from two games that, you know, you kind of needed to win. But tomorrow night is basically not a win and in. Like, they're in, but you can really make this even more interesting down the stretch if you can get closer to the Heat, etc.
Sure.
But lots of good things from this weekend with the Raptors.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough for me because regardless, I think the Raptors are in a spot where they're fighting for 8th or 9th place. It's not great. Like, they're winning these games that are must-win games to be in the play-in, but, like, I think I'm stuck on thinking, well, not every game is going to be pretty. Like, a win is a win. You don't need style points at the end of the day, right? Like, if the Raptors are in the play-in, we're not going to look back and say, well, I wish they would have won that game in a prettier way. But at the same time, I look at this Raptors team and think, like, is this what you, like, decided to continue to go all in on?
Yeah.
Like, if this is the path that they want to be on, if they want to justify wanting to get into the play-in tournament and, you know, not kind of selling off at the deadline, not getting a top 10 pick this year, it needs to be better than last night against the Wizards. The Wizards did not play 3 of their starters. I mean, no Bradley Beal, no Kyle Kuzma. And they allowed that Wizards team that is short and worse than them to score, what was it, 39 points in the third?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not good. It's not good.
The Raptors were blowing that lead like they traditionally do in their script.
And then you look around the league or you look at some of the teams around them. Like, it looks like the Wizards I think they've kind of just given up on their season. I mean, they had a good push yesterday. Players don't give up, but things don't look great. And then Shams Charania from The Athletic, and he reported that the Blazers are leaning towards shutting down Damian Lillard for the rest of the season, despite the fact that Portland still has a mathematical chance to get into the play-in tournament. Both Washington and Portland are heading for top 10 picks. The Raptors are going to, like, scratch and claw their way to 500 and get into the play-in, and then what?
Actually, Fred talked about the play-in last night. It's a really interesting point because they don't ask much about what their postseason projection looks like. Obviously, post trade deadline, we realized that they were buyers instead of sellers, and, you know, a lot of their players were going to claw
this
out.
I like bringing back Jakob Poeltl, though.
Yeah, because no, he's been.
They needed a center, so that's fine. But also,
he's been obviously the big momentum shift in a sense post trade deadline. He's brought a lot to this team. He's really elevated the play of a lot of other players. I'm like, what was the play like before Jakob Poeltl? Not great.
We just complained about how the Raptors needed a center all the time.
We did, so we got one. But Freddie was asked about the play-in tournament and, you know, kind of what's next for the Toronto Raptors. And it was a really interesting answer and maybe a bit of honesty from a guy that has had a lot this season in terms of what he says in front of the media.
You look at it and, you know, there's a team in 12th or a team in 13th who's one game back from 10th. And then you're looking at it, you know, like that's a real spot in the playoffs. And so I think it just stretches the realm of reality of what a team is. And it can create, you know, unrealistic situations for a lot of teams. I think for us, a team that's been talented and kind of underperformed for the majority of the year, I think we feel really good about getting in and getting to our spot and making some noise. But again, you still got to get in, right? So it varies from team to team. I think anything that revolves around business or ratings or, you know, however even the plan was born out of COVID, won't go too far in, but there were certain teams that needed to be in for ratings or whatever. And, you know, it made more sense at that time because we had a whole portion of the season that hadn't been finished. So, again, I'm very, like, strict on basketball purity and rules, so I'm not the biggest fan of it, but we're in it, so we got to take advantage of it this year.
So he's not really a fan of the play-in. I don't know how many people really are that play the game, maybe, because as he said, they've been a team that's underperformed, but like when it comes down to it, whose fault is that, right? It's the players and the coaching and the way that the game or the team is constructed, right? So mm-hmm. You can only play as well as the players you've been given. Like, you know, I think the Raptors have been missing some pieces all season long. We've talked about, well, all you did in the offseason was add Otto Porter Jr. and he didn't play. Mm-hmm. You know, what was your direction this offseason? Fred is a leader on this team. He's, you know, commenting on how they've underperformed. He can certainly attest to some of that himself personally. But he also adds the incentive of, we are a team that once we get in, I think we can make some noise. And that's been when the Raptors look really good. We've had this conversation, Justin and I, often on the show. It's like, if they play like that, they are a scrappy, tough team to play against. Like, if you're an opposing team looking at the teams you might have to play in against, I would say the Raptors are probably near the top of the list of teams you wouldn't want to play, just because they can string together a four-quarter performance that is scary. But when they're not clicking, they're not scary. So mm-hmm. I think Fred brings a good point there. If they can be a scrappy, tough team to play against, doesn't love the format of it, but nonetheless, we're in it. That's what we're doing. So it's interesting just to hear a player talk about a playoff format. Yeah. We hear this all the time in the NHL. It's like, oh, should it be one, you know, should it be like this way? And they're like, yeah, but like, whatever.
When
you know.
They had it, because the bubble season, everyone complained about it because mm-hmm. the Leafs got upset. I mean, the Oilers got upset. You know, everyone kind of wants the expanded format until their favorite team gets upset by the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
But I think in the NBA, with the play-in tournament, I mean, when you look in the West, every single game, like almost every single game at this current point in the season,
crazy.
Matters and has playoff implications. And that's, you know, that's good business for the NBA. It's good for ratings. You know, you can watch the Utah Jazz and Pelicans play against each other, you know, on a Tuesday night and be like, wow, this means something. So that's the benefit of having a play-in tournament, is it makes things matter. And obviously for the Raptors, it's made them, you know, be in the mix. Whether or not they're like a legitimate playoff contender or not, I think remains to be seen.
And it all comes down to like what they can do over the next three or four games.
But at the end of the day, they're going to be a play-in team. They're not going to. So we'll see if they can clinch a play-in spot and make some noise, but they're just so inconsistent that it's kind of hard to know.
So Raptors and Heat tomorrow at home. They've been great at Scotiabank Arena. You've got Kyle Lowry coming back to town. That's always a fun sight to be seen. So maybe he puts up something and makes this game a little bit more competitive, because the Raptors need to win it. That's easily stated. They got Friday against the Sixers. That's another one that's going to be tough. Lots of important moments here for the Raptors. Let's see if they can keep some consistency. As we mentioned, it's opening week for the MLB. We'll break down all that. The Blue Jays did name their opening day starter Alek Manoah.
Yeah.
I knew it. I felt it. And I love it.
It's not some crazy, crazy off the board pick.
But it's exciting.
Yes,
we'll play some of that.
Congratulations. I concede defeat.
Yeah, no. It's all good. We got lots of breakdown in terms of opening week. You got Manoah being named. There's still a couple battles in terms of positions on this Blue Jays roster to be solidified this week. They've only got two more Grapefruit League games. They'll be in action today at 1 p.m. You could check that out against the Philadelphia Phillies. That's on Sportsnet and streaming at sportsnet.ca/590 and the Sportsnet app. Only a couple more opportunities to see them before the real deal starts opening day this week. We'll tee all that up later in the show. We've got the A-list before we talk to Frank Saravelli, and then winners and losers in your 7 o'clock hour. As we mentioned, we got Blake Murphy at 8 and Atiba Hutchinson at 8:30. You got an opportunity to send your Wake and Rake picks in as well. We'll do a baby Wake and Rake after we talk to Atiba. So it's 590, 590, your picks. No Toronto sports tonight. So you got to get creative. All right. A-list on the other side of the break.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right. I'm not a big politics gal.
Okay.
Especially U.S. politics gal.
Sure.
But this one caught attention in Canada. President Joe Biden was speaking about hockey when he addressed the Canadian Parliament. He was here in his first presidential trip to Canada and just decided to take some shots at the Maple Leafs. Just unprompted, decided, hey, I'm going to make some headlines. He knows which team to pick if he wants to get himself in the Canadian media. That's what he had to say about.
He knows he's hanging out in Ottawa right now.
Yeah, he knows. He knows how to pick favorites, but that's what he had to say about the Maple Leafs.
No two nations on earth are bound by such close ties, friendship, family, commerce, and culture. Our labor unions cross borders. So do our sports leagues. Baseball, basketball, hockey. Listen to this, hockey. I have to say, I like your teams except the Leafs.
Like, tone it down. It's not that funny.
Listen to the crowd. It's like a stand-up comedy routine.
They beat the Flyers back in January. That's why. And if I didn't see that, I married a Philly girl. If I didn't say that, I'd be sleeping alone, fellas. I like you, but not that much.
God, Biden's a comedian, eh? Listen to that crowd.
It's
just
down,
like
everyone.
A thunderous applause.
Everyone beats the Philadelphia Flyers.
That's what I was going to say. Like, take a look at their stand-ins this year, Joe. But
they're in a rebuild.
I'm sure he doesn't watch too much hockey, but he took some shots at the Maple Leafs while he's in Ottawa.
And low-hanging fruit.
It worked because the crowd just pumping his tires just thought it was the funniest thing they've ever heard. But yeah, Biden, not a Leafs fan. That's great for him.
That's fine.
One more thing, because I want to make sure we talk about this with our buddy Frank on the other side of the break. But we've been talking about the Ottawa Senators, once again, who are for sale. And there's obviously some buzz around who might be interested in buying the team, blah, blah, blah. But here's a new name that maybe has potentially walked themselves into the discussion of bidding for the Senators. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Your buddy.
My best friend.
my close personal friend
in my Fab Five on my cell phone bill. Apparently, remember when you had Fab Five? You remember that, right?
Yeah.
You'd be like, Mom, Dad, my brother, the girl I carpool with.
I love that.
Oh, it was The Rock.
Yeah.
Can you smell what the Ottawa Senators are cooking? Could be Dwayne The Rock Johnson, maybe involved in the prospective buyers. Anyway, so he joined a group of investors to buy XFL rights in August 2020, and he may now look over to cross into the hockey world. We'll talk to Frank about that, but apparently the top bidders willing to pay upwards of $950 million. He's been connected with some of them.
Woohoo.
I mean, it'd be pretty awesome to have him, Ryan Reynolds in the mix. Like, this might be the most popular sporting team of all time. You've got these celebrities. Like, I think The Rock might be the most well-known celebrity in the world.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I think he's in the top five.
He's got a brand. People, and even if they don't know him or like they don't watch his movies, they're not familiar with his wrestling moves. I think you could see The Rock and be like, yeah, it's him. I know that guy.
Like, I'm struggling to think of five more celebrities that
are more well-renowned.
Do you think Brad Pitt's more world-known?
It's Brad Pitt.
Yeah, but he's only movies.
George Clooney.
You're just thinking of handsome actors.
I'm thinking of cast of Ocean's 11.
You're thinking
11.
Of one movie.
Julia Roberts.
This is a good text line question. Who is the most well-known person on the planet that's not like, you know, Trump? Someone that the entire world knows. I think it's The Rock.
You think more people know The Rock than Brad Pitt?
Yes, I do. 1,000%.
Huh.
Text in 590-590. Anyway, Dwayne The Rock Johnson could be tiptoeing into Ottawa Senators world. That would be an absolute treat. I'm sure they'd have lots and lots of fans at those games. Just a glimpse at seeing me and The Rock BFFs. You can get a photo with them.
Do you not feel betrayed? Why is he not trying to buy
good,
the
man.
Leafs?
I'll chat with him. It's all good.
Dwayne, okay. Just get the inside scoop for the show. Dwayne, can you confirm?
I'll send him a message.
Mr. Rock?
Yeah. We're going to have Frank on the other side of the break, NHL insider, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. We'll talk about the Sens and the Rock and, of course, more Pride Night issues that are happening throughout the NHL. Fortunately, it feels like every time we talk to Frank every Monday morning, there's something else to break down in terms of this, starting with the Stahl brothers this past week and weekend being the last two to decline to participate in warmups when the Leafs play the Panthers. So Leafs connection there. We'll talk about how and if the NHL can do anything surrounding that Pride Night issue we've been seeing. And there's still some teams that have Pride Nights in the future. So does anything change in the next couple of weeks? We'll chat with Frank on the other side of the break.